Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Story Blender. I'm Susan May Warren.
And I'm Stephen James.
And this is where great storytellers share the secrets of great storytelling.
And Susie, today our guest is someone I'm really excited to have on because our paths crossed a number of years ago when it looked like I might be doing a television series, and he was going to be the author the writer for it. And John Tinker is he's a television producer, he's a writer, co-created the TV show Judging Amy and wrote more than 100 episodes of it. He's also been an executive producer and writer for shows like Chicago Hope and The Practice. John won a 1986 Emmy for Outstanding Writing in a Drama Series for the script Time Heals. And so over the last few years, I've been hoping to basically kind of pick his brain a little bit more, and I'm excited. John, thanks for being here today.
Oh, it's great to be here. And I hate to enter apologizing, but I just need to correct one thing on that bio, which is I in fact wrote one episode, barely one episode of Judging Amy, though I did co-create it. Most of those episodes were written by Barbara Hall, very talented writer, now created and is running Madam Secretary. Terrific writer. She had a great staff, and they did me and another partner of mine, Bill D'Elia, proud. I got into a room one time with a gentleman who was interested in hiring me, and he said, "My gosh, you've written over 100 of those episodes." And I said, "No, actually," and I corrected him, as I did now, and then I left. He was no longer interested in me, so I hope you'll still keep me on your show and not summarily kick me out the way he did.
We're still interested. You're still
okay,
a go.
I guess
good.
So, yeah.
And Stephen, I can't believe you're interested to begin with. I that was a great regret of mine. You know, your books, I loved your books, and when they were brought to me, I still think they'd make a great series. They're just fascinating, and the characters you've got there are terrific. So I don't know. We kept getting no's. I don't know why, but you know, television is a funny thing, and it's all about the climate. You know, typically it's about the climate and a perfect storm of events that gets someone interested and they take a shot. So maybe if there's hope yet.
Yeah. It was an option and ended up not being produced, but you know, the series is still alive, and
thanks to you.
See what happens. We'd love to see something. I think it would be a fun series as well. And I still remember when we spoke on the phone years ago, you called and you said, "Hey, I'm interested in doing these. I might write." And I was just like, "That's so fantastic that you would call," because a lot of other people that I've known sort of who've had maybe shows or movies or something, it almost hasn't always been a positive experience. I'll just say it that way for them, and they haven't really always felt a part of it. So I'm sure that you know, being a producer and working with your different writers over the years has been, you know, really good for them.
You know, again, television being the funny animal that it is, as I said, you know, the writer, especially now these days, lately in the past 10 or 15 years, the writer really is king. Unlike in features, whereas, you know, the director is the king, the writer in television really is driving things. And you know, often, especially now with short-run series, 13-order episode seasons or short-run series, you know, some writers even opt to write them all themselves. So collaboration, you know, it's a funny thing now. I don't, you know, I know a lot of folks just doing it on their own, or the writers' rooms are very small, but collaboration, you're right, can be an unhappy experience. But that wasn't going to be the case with you and I really liked working with you, and you were very thorough, and I appreciated all your help, and I just, you know, I still think it makes a great series.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what the future might bring? So
that's right.
So we shall see.
I'm curious, John. So do you get a lot of your ideas for, you know, television series or even movies from books, or are they, you know, where do you get all? I mean, obviously you read one of Stephen's books maybe and got an idea from that, or saw a proposal or something. But where do you? Is that the common for you?
Well, I think it's common for a lot of folks. Right now, IPs, intellectual properties, are very big. So if you can go to a studio or a network with again, Stephen, with your books, you know, if you could go with those, that makes a big difference. That they see the real estate, and it's really quantifiable. So right now, IP are a very big thing when it comes to selling series, and the same is happening in features too. But you know, I there are different things. There are, you know, I'll have certain experiences. We were talking a moment ago off air about Tennessee, and my wife and I had gone recently to you know, what used to be called an orphanage up in Tennessee. They, you know, the family living houses, or they go by various names. And you know, I thought that might be an interesting series to do. I just felt it was a different slant on a family show, and you know, couldn't at least yet can't sell it because it feels to the networks or a lot of the people who are looking to buy a little soft. You know, you'll look on television now, most of the stuff or so much of the stuff is extreme, or it's alternate reality, or it's fantasy, or it's superhero. There's very little of that. I don't know, the television that I suppose would have defined the, you know, the 80s and the early 90s, those, I guess, more quiet, more thoughtful shows. You can still find them. You know, when I say quiet and thoughtful, something like that I've watched lately is The Affair on HBO. I mean, my wife and I were watching it the other day, and she commented, and I realized it's one of the things I like about that show. It just takes its time, and it allows moments to rest, and when it needs to move, it moves. And if they don't need dialogue, they don't use dialogue. It's very spare sometimes. So, you know, selling those things, I don't like to be market-driven, but I have to make a living. So whether it's newspaper articles or a personal experience like I had in Tennessee or crossing Stephen's books, you know, the ideas can come from anywhere. And having moved the last 3.5 or 4 years ago now to the South, it's just it's put a different spin on the kinds of stories I want to tell and the places and the people. It's so funny, you know, someone said to me, do folks really, you know, do they read in the South? And quoting my wife, I said, well, actually, they not only read in the South, they write a lot of what you read. You know, some of the great writers are Southern writers. So, again, you know, it's a long way around the block to say wherever you can pick up an idea that hopefully you're going to feel excited about writing if you're lucky enough for 5 or 6 years. And wow. Or maybe at a short burst in a short-run series or a limited series. But it's got to excite me first. I've got to think that there's a lot of material there, and it's got to make me wonder. It's got to make me curious. And hopefully when I write it, I'll express those things and make folks who are viewing the show feel those same feelings.
Right, right.
Now, a lot of people talk about character arcs and story arcs, and you find this all the time in, you know, script books and writing books and things like this. And when you're working on a series that might last 100 episodes or, you know, 20 or more, how do you, as a producer and a writer, look at that? Do you try to have this character transformation arc, or do you look for static characters that are just intriguing and slowly revealed? How do you approach that?
Well, you know, I'm an old guy, and I've been doing this a long time. And, you know, when I first started writing in the 80s, the networks and the studios, no one asked us for that stuff. No one was wondering where we go in the first season and then subsequent seasons following. I don't like to approach it that way. I think the word that you used best describes it, which is revealing. I'm writing a pilot right now for a studio, and you know, just the pilot in itself, as I comb through it again and again, the characters are starting to emerge, and their lives are revealing themselves to me. And I find that's one of the most exciting things about writing, that it's not just me writing. Whatever that thing is, whether it's just a creative process, however you want to define that, or a muse or God, it doesn't matter. It's just exciting to go on the journey with them. So, no, I don't, only at the behest of folks who are interested in buying these things and set bars over which I need to jump, I have less interest in sitting down and thinking long-term. I mean, I think I feel it. I think I have a visceral feeling for whether it's going to be 100 episodes or more, or whether I think it's just there's not enough there to even warrant a movie.
Right.
So I have that sort of visceral feel, and then as I get in, as I start to wade into the water, it all, what's underneath that water begins to appear, and that's what's exciting, as I said, and it just leads you in different directions. And I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know as creative people, and so I like that revelation. It's as much for the audience as it is for me. When I worked on St. Elsewhere, none of us wrote for the audience. We wrote those things and followed those paths and went down those rabbit holes that seemed curious to us, and what made us laugh, what made us cry, what did we wonder about, what did we rage about. And you know, we never got huge ratings. In fact, at one point we were dead last, but fortunately at the time NBC had such huge problems and other fish to fry, they just left us alone and we got to do what we did. I think so much writing is spoiled by networks and studios asking you to plot it out, because it just doesn't shake out that way typically. And if it does, I find that it feels a lot more generic. I think that's, I don't think I'm using too broad a brush, but I think that's why the networks are still unable to look different and feel different when they put their shows on. It's happening, but so at such a glacial pace, because they need to know what happens and where do they go, and we need to outline and make sure it's clear and evident where everyone's going. And, you know, life's not like that. It's not clear and evident where each of us is going on any given day, let alone where we'll be a year from now. And that's what makes life great, and that's what I believe can make art great, if I can use that word to describe television. And I apologize, because I know I've offended a lot of people.
No, I love that. I think, no, I love great television. I think it's, you know, man, there's so many really interesting shows out there. I loved St. Elsewhere, by the way. And it was, you know, back when I was just in high school, and I thought it was a fantastic show. But I think that, you know, it's interesting how you're describing that process, because, you know, I've done long series where I'll start with a set of characters and sort of develop them as I go. And then I'll do, you know, then I'll sell like a 6-book series, and the publisher will want the complete arc of all the characters up front. They want to see everything, right?
Right.
And it's kind of, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels a little bit like, you know, the difference between starting out on a series that possibly could have 100 episodes versus, you know, like a 13-episode limited run, you know, where they know the beginning and the end and the whole, you know, sort of arc. And so, and then it kind of reminds me a little bit of the conversation that Stephen and I have about pantsing versus, or outlining versus organic, right?
Right.
So as you're starting out, you know, you start out with these characters and you're revealing them as you go. That's sort of an organic kind of process, right? Is that kind of what you're saying versus sort of the outline of, you know, the short run series?
Yeah, I will at times, you know, I've sort of was, you know, whipped into submission, probably not such a bad idea, being in a business that was, you know, entertainment, but it was a business, so I had to, you know, follow the strictures of what was being set up. So I do, for better or worse, there are times when I really do need to outline, and I think it's just me walking around sort of getting the lay of the land. And I may not even stick to the outlines, but I know what feels right and what doesn't feel right, and pretty, I have a pretty good idea of what's going to fall by the wayside and what's just, you know, it's chaff. And and I think it's what just from years of doing it enables me to, and I don't know, you know, if you guys have written stuff where it's a specific length, as in television, where you have a script of X number of pages. But it's enabled me now pretty much to land, to hit that target each time.
Right.
And not run over, and to learn to be spare. I mean, there are some good, I think there are some real reasons, some good reasons for outlining. But again, I don't like to, it's not like putting up a frame of a house for me.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty much just looking at the kinds of materials and imagining what that architecture might look like.
Right.
I was thinking a moment ago, you said you loved St. Elsewhere. There were two things that came to mind. One, much like a series in an arc, you just can't plan it. There was a character that came on the show, was going to be one scene and out. And
oh,
her
really?
Name was Mrs. Huffnagel. And she wound up being a major character and a memorable character for a lot of people who were devotees of the show. And it's just, you realize there's something to chase there. And so let yourself chase it. And unfortunately, as I was... tarring them, the networks will often not understand or not want to go down and chase things that you really, as a writer, feel are going to be interesting and serve your story and your characters well.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to mention about St. Elsewhere is if you go back and look at it now, I think you'll be less of a fan. the narrative of television, storytelling, and the way we do it and the way we watch it is so different now. St. Elsewhere is just at a turgid pace. It's expository in many areas. I love the show.
Right.
Don't misunderstand me, but television shows are just different. Some hold up better than others. Some feel a little dated, and it's a little stale, but proud of it, and I think we talked about things that were meaningful. And so if you can, for me, if you can entertain and then try and be a little bit meaningful and maybe even educational, that means a lot to me.
Well, I think I agree. And I think it also set up a kind of this thirst for other medical dramas, right? You had, others that came after it, ER, Chicago Hope. I guess you were kind of involved in that one too. But it kind of set this idea, for, hey, we can follow the lives of this medical staff, and which gets back to another question I had. And then Stephen, I know you want to jump in here. You were talking a little bit about outlining, and I think that, and you're saying it's, it kind of helps form that kind of structure that helps you find your word count or your script length, right? And we have the same thing in a book. You have a word count that you have to sort of adhere to. Well, some of us, Stephen breaks every rule out there, but I adhere to the rules, right? So, but it's almost like, I feel sort of maybe that you're saying that you're kind of letting the organic happen in the overall structure or the overall flow of the series, of the episodes, but within the confines of the actual episode, you're following more of an outline as you're going through. Would that be correctly stated?
Well, it's not so much a blueprint, to go back to my bad analogy. It's one of those materials that I have to build this structure. And and my worst, I think my worst habit as a writer, I do tend to be, and my wife will not let me forget it, tend to be obsessive compulsive. And so if I'm writing a story and I've got lots of ideas, I'm just trying to jam everyone in there, and I can't seem to sometimes let those things go. So my biggest problem is just hopefully I'll get a chance to use them later and to use the ones that are really most organic to that story I'm trying to tell. But again, I have some idea of a framework, but it's more just what are those things right off the bat in a pilot or in a given episode that I'm wrestling with or interested by or that confuse me.
Right, right.
Yeah, John, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not there are two things that I don't think necessarily lend themselves well to television. One is, is what we've been talking about, where are your arcs and where are you going and what are you doing? The writer either probably has a really good idea where he's going and maybe can't even express it in the room, or he just has that gut feeling that it's there. Let me do it. Just let me do it. And writers so often, until they hit a couple or so out of the park, and the networks will back up. Some really good writers are just being stifled from the get-go, and as a result, either not being heard or they're not being allowed to develop their own craft, and it's denying people some great stories that need to be told.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're kind of, it's sort of the difference between an artist saying, just trust the process, right, versus
right.
businessman going, but we want to see the whole outline, we want to see the whole business plan, right, and sometimes they don't mesh. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, and I think while I'm piling on here, piling on the networks, you know, and the studios, instead of trying to, you know, redesign and rethink the creative process, let's redesign and recreate the business process. You know, don't jump in and commit to 13 when most people said, how'd they get 3 episodes and it went off?
Right,
you
right.
Know, so it would be, I think it's, there's a, and you know, Amazon and Netflix and people like, you know, they're really doing that. I mean, there are folks now who are writing 13 and then they go and shoot them. They write them all and shoot them, and so again, I that's exciting to me. And whether I'll get that chance, that would be great. But people are getting that chance, and I'm glad to see that there are folks who have revisited their side of the fence and figured out what needs to be done.
Yeah,
I mean, it certainly is an exciting time in television. There's just some extraordinary writing over the last probably 6-8 years that. You know, different shows that I've watched, and I was like, man, this is super, super writing. And so
there is some great writing, and some things I really love, and some things I don't care about. But I can watch shows, and even the ones I don't really care to watch, I'll think, I'm really glad that got made. I'm glad it's getting made because someone's watching it, and it's a different audience. So there are audiences being served, and it is an exciting time. You're right.
Yeah, so now, when you were talking about this process, oh, sorry, Susie.
No, go ahead, Stephen. Go ahead. I'm
just
queuing up my next question, so you go ahead and we'll see if I have time. Go ahead.
All right, take it easy, guys.
That,
don't you fight.
I don't know where I was. I think I was recently teaching at a conference, and a lady came up to me. She said, I'm an artist. She said, in my career, I've painted about 1,000 paintings. And she said, before I started, I knew what every one of them was going to look like. And I was like, wow, okay, well, you must be an outliner, basically, or a plotter. But then she said, but at the end, not a single one of them looked like what I knew it was going to look like when I started.
Huh.
And it was really fascinating to me. That's really the process, I think, the creative process. We go into it, I think, with certain aspects of expectations. So maybe the length, like you mentioned, John, or maybe the genre that we're writing in or whatever it might be, but we kind of have these expectations. But once you're in that process, you have to follow the story out and not just jam in the stuff that's clever or interesting like you're mentioning the temptation is, but instead to see it emerge and then suddenly you have this painting or this work of art, you know, a television show, whatever it is, where it's like, this doesn't look like what I thought, but... You know, it's genuine to it's honest to the story.
That's very well said. You're right.
Yeah.
So I know that you've done writing and producing, right?
Yes.
So I want to know which one do you like better? And
writing.
I mean,
I don't even
writing.
Have to. You don't have to finish the question. Writing.
and why is that? Why do you like writing better?
Because producing in television, unless you have someone there. Absorb the body blows for you, that's all it's about. You know, I'm going all the way back to St. Elsewhere, Bruce Paltrow. You know, Bruce afforded Tom Fontana and I and John Macias and a lot of other people to write, just to write and to think about the show while the networks called him and beat him to death about costs and guest stars and this and that. And all of those things, all of those elements of producing have only gotten worse. And when it comes to the smallest guest role or the warmth of the show or anything, there are so many people, you know, looking to stick their finger in your pie that it just becomes overwhelming and you begin to lose your vision and you become distracted. You know, to take absolutely nothing away from David Kelly, for whom I've worked and for whom I have maybe the greatest respect as a television writer, is certainly one of the top 5, absolutely. David had people, I was one of them, and Bill D'Elia was another, and there were people like Bob Breach and others who were producing, and it's in part what enabled him to write three dramas at the same time, and to, I don't know that it's been done again, but he won the Comedy and Drama Emmy in the same season. He
wow.
just got to write. He just, and he's phenomenal. If you just get out of the way, the floodgates open and he writes. But the producing part of it is not a lot of fun. What is fun is I guess producing small P, which is just getting to do those things, casting and cutting in the editing room and all the other things. I love that. I like being a part of the show. I don't like just writing. I love writing, but you guys know, especially you guys know, it's a solitary experience often, and it's lonely at times, and you just kind of want to get out. So that I find that a distinct pleasure when running a television show as an executive producer, as a showrunner. You know, you can write, and then you go to casting, and then you go to editing, you come back and you write some more, and then you call to the set. As hectic as that can be, and as much as one might complain about it when in the middle of it, it's really, really rewarding. And it's unpredictable, and it's not just bothersome. It can be great if you get called to the set and you make a change there, and they're going to shoot it right now. Or you go to the editing room and you get to rewrite. It's just that producing small P, but I don't like being the guy who keeps getting called and hammered and has to deal with all of the nuts and bolts of it. But it's a business, as I said, and so it's a necessary part. But writing is great, and that's what I live for when I'm in television. And I think anyone running a show is, you know, they want to be on a show that they just think about, that they eat and they sleep and they breathe all the time. It's exciting.
Yeah. I think that every writer probably has a dream of having their work produced, you know, either on television or film. And I know I do. I think that would be really neat. And like you said, I would love to be involved in the casting and all that kind of stuff, small P, not big P, right? I think that would be really fun. I don't ever want to have the headaches of the other. And so, I'm curious. I know you've written at least one movie that was produced, right?
I've written two now, neither of which are produced. And but you go ahead and ask your question, because I'll probably give you the same answer I could give you right now.
Well, I was going to say, how do you know when an idea is, and this is for the aspiring writers out there, when an idea is a television idea versus a movie idea? And the reason I'm asking that is that I'm a huge Outlander fan, so I've read all the Outlander books, and Diana Gabaldon recently had her books produced into a TV series. But I read an interview about, you know, how she for years was approached by people that wanted it into a movie. So glad she made it into a TV show, waited, and you know they did that because it's so fantastic. But just you know, like, how do you know which is which, right?
Well. That was a trick question. I thought you were going to ask me which I prefer doing. I prefer doing television. But
you got to stand your feet with me here.
If we could predict that, if I could predict it, I'd be a whole lot more successful. I think for me, again, just for me, it's how fast do the ideas come? How fast do the emotions come when I hear the idea? When I see something happen in public, when I read a newspaper story, I think it's for me just a visceral feeling. I've had a lot of difficulty at times convincing people something is a series, and yet there are other times when I honestly will say, well, that's not a series, and lo and behold, in a season or so, I turn on the TV and it runs for six. I think the only way to understand or believe it's a series or it's a short run is to, you know, how loud does it speak to you, and how eager are you to dive in, and do you feel it's got some real longevity to it? There are things I just don't get. how they make them into a series, but they seem to. Mm. For me, even some of those things feel redundant. But I right away can, well, it's like the thing I talked about in Tennessee. I believe that's a different family show, but and I do believe there are endless stories there because you've got people of all ages and people of all ethnicities and mental abilities, and it's there are myriad stories to tell.
Right.
But again, it's just for me. Do I want to raise it? Is it an idea I believe I can raise and that's
grow.
All. I wish I had a better answer.
No, that's
yeah, no,
good.
I
think that was a great answer because it's that whole, do you see beyond just right now to more? Does it spark a potential for other pieces? You know, I love that. I think that's a good answer. Even though it's more of a feeling answer, it's great. So it's
all about the feelings, you know?
It's all about the feeling. It's all about the emotion. It's good.
Yeah. I think it, you know, something that you were mentioning earlier is that tastes change and that what might have been popular 20, 30 years ago, or 10 even, you know, that the tastes of people in television and our viewing habits have changed so much. What would you say when you look at the storytelling that's being done today that are some of the hallmarks of good storytelling on television? I mean, we could pick on certain shows, but instead, let's just say, what are a couple of the maybe really things that you've seen that really are like, this is great writing or storytelling, or this is what people are hungry for today?
Well, you know what, you've caught me. You're going to catch me sort of with my pants down because I don't do a lot of viewing, a lot of drama, or even comedy. I do even less comedy viewing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny because people ask me about reading novels, and I'm just like,
Do you, Stephen, do you find that plays with your own voice and your characters, or do you just have no interest, or you know, more interested in your own to write rather than read?
Well, part of it is time. I just you know, it's just hard for me to swing the time, but part of it is I actually avoid the books in the genre that I write because I don't want it to affect my voice. But I love to read, but often if I've been editing or writing all day, it comes to be 8 o'clock at night, and I'm just like, I don't want to read a book. It's like, that's all I've been doing since 5 a.m. So sometimes I flip. But it's so funny because people are like, well, you write, you know, you must read all these novels. I'm like, actually, I kind of watch shows more than I read.
I should probably be watching a little more just because, you know, it's my business and I should be aware of what's out there, you know. But I, like you, I don't seem to do it, you know. And then they'll have great regret because I didn't watch The Wire when The Wire was on, and then I watched it relentlessly till I burned through it.
Yeah.
But I think what you said about taste change and what those tastes are from year to year or television season to television season are so ephemeral, and I can't begin to, you know, figure out what they are. When
right.
it comes to viewing habits, you know, I think that's a little more, if not, you know, if not dissectable, understandable. I mean, the attention span of people viewing is much shorter, and not just for programs in particular, but within scenes, and so you find that the audience has a very sort of a two-edged sword. While on the one hand, it has a great capacity to understand narrative to intuit it, just to get it. Okay, I don't need to watch them pull up and walk up to the door, and I don't even need a lot of the lead-up in the scene. I can just get it. And if I don't get all the crumbs in one scene, I'll just hang around, and I'm going to get it later on, and then I'll backfill. That's not the way, you know, television used to be written, in large part because I don't think the audience had the capacity, but because of our literal viewing habits and how we process information now, and literally from the visual to the written word, how we process the information, you know, that affects what I'm writing right now. You know, what I'm writing right now is it's a procedural and probably would have been on in the late 70s, early 80s, but I'm finding a way to update that. It wasn't my idea. It was brought to me. And I'm finding a way to update that and adapt it narratively so that it looks and feels like what is the way audiences are viewing these days, what their habits are and what they will stick around and watch and engage with versus what just won't hold their attention.
Those are some really good points. I like what you said about trust, trusting that the story will, you know, kind of conclude or in other words, like the mysteries and so on. We saw also backfilling. And, you know, I think that's true for both maybe writing for the screen as well as writing for the page. I mean, people today, and I've said this, you know, at events and conferences, they're very narratively astute. People can get it and they can follow stuff. And a lot of writing that might be called classics from, you know, 50 or 100, 150 years ago, whatever, you read them now and you're just like, this isn't that great of storytelling. I mean, there's obvious plot flaws and there's, you know, coincidence is always being used to try and solve things. Whereas today, like, that would never work because we have higher standards, you know, for the quality. So,
yeah, higher or different or both, I don't know, but it's what I was addressing with St. Elsewhere. It's a different, you're right, it's a different standard, it's a different style. It's put out there quickly and it's absorbed more quickly. I don't know that it makes for a more satisfying experience, maybe it does, but again, I don't watch a whole lot of TV and I don't know how I got watching The Affair. There's, you know, one thing I really like. It just take your time and tell your story. I mean, let the actors act. You can give them fewer words and let them. I find when I run shows, some of the best actors will come to me and ask to cut lines because we've overwritten, and the best actors will know I can do it in fewer words. I'll get the point across and. So I just think it makes a more satisfying experience all the way around.
Yeah. When you think of stories that have, stick out for you, either ones you've read or written, some people, they look at plot and they look at the movement or the different beats of a story or the emotions. What is it that really, to you, draws you into a story? I know for me, a lot of times it's emotion. It isn't just, seeing the events or even suspense or something like that. But I like what you said earlier, too, John, about asking big questions, kind of like addressing big issues and not being afraid to do that. And I think, you know, great storytelling doesn't shy away from asking questions that matter.
Right. I like that too, and what will typically draw me in is a reaction of a character, not even an action, but a reaction they have to something that occurs, and it also applies for me for the writers that I'm able to hire. I love writers who come in the room and they have a completely different take on life or would have a completely different reaction to something. And while I might say, oh, come on, you wouldn't do that, if they can explain it to me or if it makes sense, not even intellectually, just emotionally or for that character or in their own life, I love that.
Yeah.
And so I love to, drop them in a situation and what's the first reaction? You know, it's how does it catalyze? And that's what draws me in more than plot necessarily or even character up front. I can know nothing about the character. I can watch their initial reaction and then get to understand them. And it then makes sense to me and unfolds and possibly doesn't even make sense to that character before it makes sense to me. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I think that ties in too with what you said earlier, you know, about character revelation, that it's slowly becoming, we become more clear on the character, and it maybe isn't
right.
The quirkiness at first, but it's getting to know them over time.
Yep, exactly.
So let's say somebody wants to break in before we kind of close up. Well, are there any steps or conferences or books or anything that you would say to someone who's an aspiring writer and says, man, I really want to get, you know, my foot in the door? What are kind of the steps or the... I'm sure it's different for a lot of different people, but what would you...
Yeah, that's, that, you know, again, if I had that answer, unfortunately, it is, for me, it's as different as the number of situations. I mean, obviously, first and foremost, just keep writing. Well, I would say let the writing be informed, not necessarily by what you're hoping to write, you know, what's being shot at, what are on the local movie screens or what's on TV or what you're reading. I mean, you could take the temperature, you stick your finger up and get the direction of the wind maybe, but more importantly, you know, be true to yourself and not be derivative. I actually had an ABC executive say after my pitch, yeah, I just wish it were more derivative. Could it be more like something else? And then just keep while you're pounding away on your keyboard, just keep pounding away on doors and trying to get an agent. And there are all kinds of necessary evils, like agents and managers and people like that, who can get your material read. And in particular in television, wherever you can get in, I don't care where you get in, you know, you can get in and by being an electrician or a grip or a PA. Most people think of being a PA first, or a writer's assistant. That's even better. But wherever you get in, it will inform your writing if in fact you're interested in writing for that medium, for television. It'll just not only for production value, but it'll just inform what you're doing. And there's, for me, I was blessed, amazingly blessed. I went to California. I got I managed to get a job as a gopher on Knott's Landing, a nighttime soap. And then the next season, I got hired to be the PA on St. Elsewhere. And then Paltrow took me under his wing. And that made all the difference in the world. You know, if you can find yourself, you know, if you're able to get around good people who care about raising you up, there are those people that are still there, and I probably don't know a lot of younger names, but, you know, Tom Fontaine is a great guy, and David Kelly, these are all people who look to nurture. David Milch is a great nurturer of talent. He will just, you know, hang on, but he'll sweep you along. But wherever you can get in, just get in, and most importantly, you got to keep writing. There's really no formula, otherwise you wouldn't have asked me the question.
right, exactly. No,
very cool.
Good.
No, it's a good place to close up with. And
on a depressing note?
What's that?
On a depressing note?
No. On the note of perseverance, man.
Yes.
I think you're absolutely right.
Thank you for turning it around in such a positive way. Thank you.
No, that's fascinating. That's good.
It does. It is tougher now than ever, but it can be so worth it. So worth it.
It's good.
Yeah, we got to keep, you know, working at our craft. And, you know, I've been thinking about this lately, is like when I wake up, it's like, am I doing what I was meant to do today? Not am I being as successful as I want to be. Am I doing what I was meant to do? And as a storyteller, I'm like, I'm going to write the stories. And obviously I want them to sell and be successful like this, but that's not in my control. The only thing in my control is telling the story well. And so I like to actually, you know, look at that and say, look, you know, life is unpredictable. Sometimes breaks come and sometimes they don't. But what we can do is, you know, pursue excellence and persevere and keep doing what we were meant to do and tell great stories.
Mm-hmm. Again, very well said.
Yeah. Good.
So, John, how can people, do you have a website or any way if people want to follow any of your new projects, IMDb, what would you say would be the best?
I'm on, you know, IMDb, I find, use it a lot, but I'm unwilling to pay for it, of course. I don't, you know, it can be inconsistent and erroneous, as I mentioned at the top of the call when someone thought I had written
right,
all those
right.
episodes. I don't have a website. I'm not the guy you need to. I would, you know, there are other guys out there who you need to follow more than me, who are really cutting edge television now, and I'm going to blank on all their names, but you got Frank Spotnitz, and doing the new show at Amazon, and you've got a bunch of others that they really have tapped into not only a way of telling those stories that post 9/11 Americans don't seem to want to tell. So you need to tell them, kind of need to hide the pill inside the cookie. You know, they don't really want to deal with the day-to-day. As I said, you know, you've got so much alternate reality, superhero existential stuff that these guys are tapping into a way of telling those stories, telling those narratives, and making them relevant. So those are the people to watch. You know, if I'm back on the air, watch me. But watch those folks. Fontana does it often by telling historical stories. And I just find those are the people right now who are telling an interesting story.
Yeah, so that's good. Check out the shows you like. Look at the producers, the
Absolutely.
Writers.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of.
And what is it about those shows that excite you? I mean, is it because you want to do something completely different, or is they're striking a chord in you where you want to write something similar but different enough that it's not derivative?
Right.
Yeah, striking a chord. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, thanks so much for being here. It was great talking. I was taking notes as you spoke. So.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you guys very much for having me on. And I enjoy your show, and I enjoy your work, and love to do it again.
Thank you.
Yeah, sounds
Thank
great.
You.
So for info on my books, check out stephenjames.net.
And for my books and information on story crafting, go to susanmaywarren.com and learnhowtowriteanovel.com.
For other great guests and other episodes and broadcasts, click to thestoryblender.com. And always remember,
the art of the story is all in the blend.
See you next time.